Hello there and welcome. Today is Wednesday, February 6th. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Glad to have you with us. Coming up, amid a divided America, President Trump delivers his second State of the Union address.
Our country is vibrant and our economy is thriving like never before.
A rising political star is about to give the Democratic response. The rush to save baby flamingos in Africa from climate change-driven drought. Also ahead, a music icon who would have turned 74 today. It's all on today's International Edition. Well, facing a divided Congress for the first time, President Donald Trump touted the economy and warned emboldened Democrats in his State of the Union speech Tuesday that, quote, ridiculous partisan investigations could derail economic progress. The remarks previewed how he plans to possibly defend himself as the new Democratic House majority launches a flurry of investigations into his administration and personal finances.
If there is going to be peace and legislation, there cannot be war and investigation. It just doesn't work that way.
And many of his remarks touted progress, calls for bipartisanship, and urging Washington to govern not as two parties, but as one nation.
After 24 months of rapid progress, our economy is the envy of the world. Our military is the most powerful on earth by far.
Trump's speech to lawmakers and the nation comes at a critical moment in his presidency. He pushed his party into a lengthy government shutdown over border security only to cave to Democrats. But with another shutdown looming and deadline looming, the president has few options for getting Congress to fund a border wall, and he risks further alienating the party if he tries to circumvent lawmakers by declaring a national emergency instead. Here's what he had to say on this topic.
Now, Republicans and Democrats must join forces again to confront an urgent national crisis. Congress has 10 days left to pass a bill that will fund our government, protect our homeland, and secure our very dangerous southern border. Now is the time for Congress to show the world that America is committed to ending illegal immigration and putting the ruthless coyotes, cartels, drug dealers, and human traffickers out of business.
Well, this message clashed with rancorous atmosphere he's helped cultivate in the nation's capital, as well as the desire most Democrats have to block his path during his next 2 years in office. Delivering the Democratic address, a rising star in Democratic politics, former Georgia State House Minority Leader and candidate for the state's governor, Stacey Abrams, who is about to speak but has not yet, as the president continues to walk out of the Capitol, shaking many hands of supporters. Well, joining us now live from the United States from Washington, where the president, just wrapping up his speech, White House correspondent, VOA White House correspondent Patsy Wuttakuswara. Patsy, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
So did the president do anything, do you think, to bridge the partisan divide between Democrats and Republicans?
Well, I think he certainly tried. I mean, there were a number of bipartisan calls. There was a number of legislations that he highlighted, from infrastructure to prescription drugs, paid family leave, protecting existing conditions. These are all issues that Democrats can get behind. But beyond that, beyond those calls in terms of the legislative agenda, I thought he also just extended quite a nice olive branch to the Democrat female lawmakers, who are all wearing white. None of them, or most of them, did not stand up or clap during his speech, except for one moment of unity when the president noted that a century after a woman's right to vote, more women are now serving in Congress, to which everybody, including the women in white, were clapping and cheering USA, USA. So I thought in terms of tone, you know, as you mentioned, there are quite a number of very conservative agenda, very marked warnings about investigations to the Russian meddling and things like that. But there are also quite a few bipartisan calls of unity.
You mentioned the Democratic women wearing white, all in white. Explain what that symbolizes.
So this is the second time that the Democrats women are wearing white. The first time was in 2017 at the president's first joint speech to Congress, which was not a State of the Union because he had just been inaugurated for about a month. So the color white traditionally marks the suffragette movement, which is basically a movement which led to the women's right to vote in the 1920s in the U.S. Now, this year, the Democrats are wearing it again to mark the suffragette movement, but also to highlight their agenda to promote economic security for women and their families. So as you can see, almost all the women, the Democrat women, wore white, except for one that I noted, which is Senator Amy Klobuchar from Minnesota, who wore purple, who might be also a token of bipartisan unity, you know, red and blue for both colors of the two parties.
Very interesting. I did not notice that. What was there a moment that stood out for you in the president's speech that you think might be the most talked about or most memorable?
Yes, I think that there's a big show of unity from the Democrats, definitely. Nancy Pelosi, as she was walking into the Speaker of the House, as she was walking into the chamber, she was asked by a reporter how she's going to be reacting to this, how Democrats are going to be reacting to this. And all she said was the House will be in order. However, there was that one moment that stood out for me was when the president introduced one of his guests, the Pittsburgh Massacre survivor, Judith Samet. And today is his 81st birthday. And after the president said that, the House, and I believe this is coming out from the Democratic side, started singing happy birthday to Judith Samet, you know, a kind of like a cheeky, perhaps, maybe just to poke President Trump a little bit. And he did look visibly a little bit upset trying to get back to his speech. So I thought that was just another one of those things where the Democrats are showing respect to the president, but also at the same time kind of needling him a little bit. As we can see, there are a lot of new Democratic members who are very much against the president's agenda. We saw several times Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, for example, looking stone-faced, refusing to stand up, as there were a number of other Democratic new members.
A major theme of the president's campaign and of his time in office so far has been the issue of immigration, illegal immigration. What
Correct.
Did he say about plans to avoid another government shutdown?
He didn't actually say anything other than repeat his previous talking points. And he did say that, you know, in the past, most of the people in this room voted for a wall, but the proper wall never got built. I will get it built. So in terms of tone about that, there's no movement at all. And so we're really looking into another bitter, brutal fight over wall funding. As we know, the Democrats continue to deny his demand for $5.7 billion of border wall funding. Nancy Pelosi is saying that we are not giving a single dollar for that. So in 10 days, February 15th, if no deal is achieved, there's potentially another government shutdown or a national emergency can be declared by President Trump, although in recent days, many of his Republican allies are saying that that's a bad idea. So we'll see what happens in 10 days.
All right. And very quickly and lastly, we know Stacey Abrams is going to be delivering the Democratic response. This was a long speech by the president, so we haven't heard her yet. But do you know anything about the theme of what she might say?
So the choice for Stacey Abrams is interesting, right, by the Democrats. It highlights her party's concern for diversity. She is an African-American female, but also highlights the Democrats' concerns on access to voting. Because as we know, Stacey Abrams narrowly lost a bid in November to be Georgia's governor amidst claims of voter suppression. So she is highlighting access to voting rights. And one of her excerpts that was released was that she's going to say that we must reject the cynicism that says allowing every eligible vote to be cast and counted is a power grab. And I think here she is now, just starting her speech.
All right. Well, we appreciate your perspective. Stacey Abrams is actually just walking up to the podium, so we'll get more from you maybe tomorrow. Thanks so much. That's VOA White House correspondent Patsy Witakuswara. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Well, a new report by the independent watchdog Freedom House says democracy faced its most serious crisis in decades in 2017. As free and fair elections, minority rights, freedom of the press, and the rule of law came under attack around the world. The organization says the United States retreated from its traditional role as both a champion and an exemplar of democracy in an accelerating decline in American political rights and civil liberties. VOA's diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain has that.
In its annual report, the renowned watchdog Freedom House is warning that democracy is on the retreat worldwide and singles out the United States as a major concern. The current freedom rating puts American democracy on a level with Greece, Croatia, and Mongolia, but well below other democracies such as Germany, France, and Britain. Sarah Rapucci of Freedom House says core institutions are under assault.
And our biggest concerns are attacks on the rule on the judiciary, demonization of the press, corruption and conflicts of interest, and also attacks on the legitimacy of our election.
The White House declined to comment for this story. The president has repeatedly accused the news media of unfair coverage and has personally verbally attacked individual reporters.
I'll tell you what, CNN should be ashamed of itself having you working for them. You are a rude, terrible person. You shouldn't be working for CNN.
Other experts say the U.S. is uniquely vulnerable because many of its democratic traditions are based on norms and not laws.
We are highly unusual among other countries. You know, many countries lost their democracies during World War II and rebuilt them with very strong modern constitutions that outlaw executive interference, that outlaw various things that don't even show up in our constitution at all. So we depend a great deal on norms. Those norms have been under pressure for years.
The U.S. has traditionally been a role model for other countries and still has great impact on others, Rapucci says.
Other countries do watch what's happening in the United States and take cues from our leaders' behavior. I think the president's frequent praise for some of the world's worst dictators gives the impression that he doesn't believe in the importance of democracy.
Both Rapucci and Kleinfeld believe U.S. democratic institutions are strong and resilient, but call on members of Congress and ordinary citizens to stand up for them and not take for granted they will always be there. Cindy Sain, VOA News, Washington.
Here are some of the stories we are following at voanews.com. Iran warns Israel against further airstrikes in Syria. A new report finds foreign meddling had no material impact on the U.S. midterm elections. U.S.-led coalition denies confrontation with an Iran-backed militia in Iraq. And Costa Rica's ex-leader is accused of sexual assault. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com. And on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition.
This is Science in a Minute.
An international team of astronomers wanted to determine the age of a globular star cluster called NGC 6752. So they secured observation time with the Hubble Space Telescope to observe and photograph some of the old and faint stars in the star cluster. As they studied a grouping of white dwarf stars, the astronomers noticed that the Hubble's remarkable vision also revealed a previously unknown dwarf galaxy hiding behind the cluster. The astronomers nicknamed this hidden galaxy Bedden 1 and describe it as a relatively small-sized, elongated galaxy that measures about 3,000 light-years long. It's thought that the Bedden 1 dwarf galaxy is located about 30 million light-years away from our galaxy and that it formed some 13 billion years ago. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Well, Pope Francis concluded a 3-day visit to the Arabian Peninsula Tuesday, delivering Mass to an enthusiastic crowd of thousands of people at Sheikh Zayed Football Stadium in the UAE Emirate of Abu Dhabi. The Pope met repeatedly with the Sheikh of Al-Azhar University during the visit, signing what's being called the Fraternity of Peace Initiative between religions. Edward Uranian reports for VOA from Cairo.
Pope Francis delivered Mass to a crowd of several Christian denominations Tuesday at Sheikh Zayed Stadium in the Gulf Emirate of Abu Dhabi. It was the first visit by a pontiff to the Arabian Peninsula. During his visit, Pope Francis met repeatedly with Al-Azhar University Sheikh Ahmed Tayyib, initiating what was dubbed the Fraternity of Peace. Francis and Sheikh Tayyib denounced what they called senseless wars and the exploitation of religion to promote war, violence, and terrorism. Religions, he insisted, are not the cause of war. The pastor of the International Church at Yale University, Joe Cumming, tells VOA the Pope and the Sheikh emphasized that more worldly powers create conflict rather than religion.
People pursuing gain drive conflict and then use religion, exploit religion to drive wedges that further drive conflict that leads to suffering and death. And what we need is to recover the idea of spiritual values.
Egyptian political sociologist Saeed Sadiq says politicians, businessmen, bankers, and economists spawn wars in the pursuit of their own profit. Cumming says the Pope and Sheikh stressed citizens of all faiths should be able to live together in their countries and enjoy equal rights.
And he said, I want to emphasize that Christians in the Middle East should not think of them as minorities in Muslim countries. We have to get rid of that language and instead think of them as citizens, and that we are all citizens together with equal rights and equal responsibilities, and contributing together to the advancement of our countries.
Haigazian University in Beirut President Paul Haidostian tells VOA both men delivered the same message to warmongers across the world.
Don't use religion for your acts of terror. Don't use religion to justify war. Don't use religion to justify unjust practices.
Haidostian stresses the young generation in the Middle East needs to hear a message from people in the region that is positive and reduces tension. He points out there is in fact much cooperation and many examples of religious coexistence in the region. Cumming says Pope Francis used a verse from the Quran about getting to know one another reciprocally.
All the Muslims in the audience will immediately recognize the verse in the Holy Quran, which describes that God's command created humankind diverse so that we would come to know each other.
Analyst Theodore Karasik spent 10 years in the United Arab Emirates and tells VOA Pope Francis' visit signals a new resolve to unite against hatred and extremism by bringing together Christianity and Islam to work side by side in an interfaith manner. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres travels to Addis Ababa this week for the African Union Summit. He sat down with VOA UN correspondent Margaret Bashir ahead of his trip and tells VOA cooperation between the world body and the African Union has substantially improved. And he expressed optimism that the continent is making progress on some of its biggest challenges. VOA UN correspondent Margaret Bashir spoke with him at the UN in New York ahead of his trip.
Africa is facing no shortage of conflicts or challenges, either man-made or natural. But UN Chief Guterres believes reinvigorated cooperation between the world body and African Union can play a significant role in helping the continent surmount them.
Our own objective is to make Africa overcome its difficulties, to make Africa a continent of hope, to make Africa a continent of future, to make Africa a pillar of the world in which we live, not seen as a problem, but seen as an opportunity.
One recent challenge was the presidential election in the Democratic Republic of Congo. The result was disputed, and the man many believe came in a distant second was inaugurated as president. But the handover of power went off peacefully in that country for the first time in 60 years. Guterres says all parties in the DRC should now work to move the country forward.
But we consider that what's important now, after the elections with the new government, is to create the conditions for inclusive dialogue among all parties and to make sure that we have a transition of power that allows for the country to move ahead, and will be supporting the country to move ahead.
Across the continent, Guterres said the United Nations is committed to a surge in diplomacy for peace to complement the AU's push to end conflict on the continent by 2020. He noted progress implementing the peace deal between rivals Salva Kiir and Riek Machar in South Sudan, and this week's agreement between the government of the Central African Republic and several armed groups. He also welcomed the recent reconciliation between Ethiopia and Eritrea as an important example of the potential for diplomacy.
We see in many other areas movement in the right direction, and we are totally committed to work together, the African Union and the African sub-regional organizations, to support this wind of hope, to make sure that the African continent is able to achieve its goal to end conflicts by 2020.
When the UN chief travels to Addis Ababa this week, he will be taking a message of the UN's commitment to Africa's peace, stability, and development. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
And you're listening to International Edition on VOA.
On Our Voices, we're talking about the news and issues you're talking about.
Sharing stories of development and growth across Africa, around the world, and in our lives. Topics that inform, empower,
and change the rules.
It's time for Our Voices with me, Haiti Adams-Fitzpatrick.
And Hadiza Kiari.
And Ayan Bior.
And Orion Itangi-Shaka.
Join us on Facebook at VOA Our Voices.
It's time for Our Voices.
The weekend is here, and so is another new episode of Music Time in Africa. Hello, everybody. I'm Heather Maxwell.
Time don't call my people. Now you ready to ride?
Get your Pan-African groove on with current and classic hits, neo-traditional tunes, and great songs by undiscovered artists, too. Song of the Week, Beats of Zion by Rocky Dawuni, will definitely charge up your batteries. Beats of Zion. And find out who's nominated for this year's Grammy Awards and why it's such a big deal. Join me on Music Time in Africa this Sunday and the following Saturday at 15:05 and 20:05 Universal Time.
VOA continues now as we will take a break and be right back. African VOA's International Edition continues. African Americans account for only 13.4% of the U.S. population. Still, no one can deny that they had an outsized impact on American history and culture. What's more, African Americans' ancestral countries of origin mirror the wonderful diversity of the motherland itself. An ambitious TV documentary series, Afropop, the ultimate cultural exchange, focuses on the Black experience both in Africa and the global diaspora and often connects the two. To find out more, VOA's Adam Phillips spoke with series executive producer Leslie Fields-Cruz as Afropop, the ultimate cultural exchange, enters its 11th season.
What we want to do is to invite people into these stories that have a common connection. And this particular season, there's a focus on strong women and their impact in culture or the local environment. So when you think about Mama Colonel and what she's doing in the Democratic Republic of Congo, protecting children and women who are abused. And then you have the story of Miriam Makeba, Mama Africa, an incredible artist, but also an activist who spoke out against apartheid and spent most of her life exiled, and how she helped spread the word and informed the rest of the world about what was going on in South Africa and how that ultimately helped to bring about the end of apartheid. So we look for titles that will speak to a specific theme, but the themes are shared in different ways based on the country that they're set in.
Can you give me an example of an Africa-based theme that you featured that tells us what it's like to be on the continent nowadays and telling stories?
There was a film called Welcome to Nollywood, and it's about the Nigerian film industry. The Nigerians and how they go about telling their stories is decidedly Nigerian. And there was something beautiful in how they have used the medium to express themselves.
I know that self-expression in spite of hardship or challenges is definitely a theme in the African-American documentaries you show.
People of African descent, specifically those of us in the U.S., have always had to find creative ways to express ourselves with what we've been given and with what we have. You know, when you think about the richness of soul food and where the elements of jazz come from, and even our dance, a lot of that is connected to our African roots, but it's also a human experience, right? So we're all connected just through our human experience and how we each see the world and express ourselves.
Do you have any documentaries that connect Africa with African Americans, per se?
Yeah, we had one film in the series. It was called 10 Days in Africa, and it was really the story, a young man's journey. He spent 10 days in Ghana, and he was part of a group of African Americans that were coming over, and he felt like he wasn't experiencing the Africa that he thought he was going to experience. They kept him on a tour bus. And he didn't want to be on the tour bus. He actually wanted to go out into the community. And so he wandered into some community and they opened up their doors and he felt like he was at his own family reunion. That's a wonderful story about sort of the exchange. And we're always trying to find different types of stories that address that exchange.
I noticed that your motto is Black Stories Matter, which I assume is kind of a riff on Black Lives Matter. Do you feel that Black stories aren't told in the mainstream nowadays? And what is your response to that idea?
Black stories, they're told here in the U.S., but they're always told through a very small lens. We know for a fact right now in the U.S., you know, what it means to be African-American isn't just the descendants of enslaved Africans from 400 years ago. There are African-Americans, first generation, second generation, people who migrated here just recently from, you know, Nigeria or from Ghana or from South Africa or from Jamaica and Haiti and the Dominican Republic. It's like they're all here and they're part of the American fabric. And so what we're trying to do with Afropop, we're actually saying that this experience is an American experience. And that's why it's important for us to bring those stories to the states so that they can be shared with the diversity that's here in the United States.
There's such an incredible cultural diversity, both within Africa and in the African diaspora. What actually unites Africans and African Americans and others who live outside the continent?
It's a hard question. All I know is that things that are happening in Africa through colonization and here in the States through slavery and then Jim Crow, we've all found ways to express ourselves culturally, but also through our politics or through our medicine. And we've survived. And not only have we survived, we've thrived. And we've been able to give to the larger human culture music and dance and art. Maybe that's that common thread. In the face of adversity, we've always been able to find ways to create a life that is a well-lived life.
All right, that is producer Leslie Fields-Cruz, the executive producer of Afropop, the ultimate cultural exchange, speaking to VOA's Adam Phillips. And finally today in music news. His music is credited with catapulting the popularity of reggae music in the Rastafarian movement around the world, and he would often infuse his music with political and spiritual messages. He was born February 6, 1945, and he would have been 74 years old today. Bob Marley, an international icon of Jamaican culture, music, and identity. He died at the age of 36 from melanoma, May 11, 1981. Off my single bed, we'll share. And that does it for today. We thank you so much for joining us on International Edition. You can find us anytime at voanews.com. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day.
This is VOA News.